Today, the subject of my talk is both choice and old age. I'll probably talk more about old age because I'm getting there. We're all getting there. And that's exactly the way it is, which is that what old age is what you think it is. It has nothing to do with years, but simply with your thoughts about it. And the approach I'm going to take is more of a personal belief about old age, and I'm not going to dwell on things like, you know, parents and aging or your friends and their aging. I'm simply going to approach it from a very personal perspective. Now remember, the book that we're reading right now, Creative Mind and Success, was originally published in 1919, and Holmes would have been, about 30 years old? So he wasn't speaking from experience when he wrote this chapter that we read. And so what I did was I did a little bit of digging, and there's a wonderful New Thought library that's online which has books that are in the public domain that you can go and research. And he had a book that he published in 1942. He probably would have been in his, close to 60 then? He was born in 1888, right? Oh. Okay. You look that up. But anyhow, he published a book in 1942 called New Thought Terms and Their Meanings. And here's how he defines old age. He says, it arises from the belief that there is a beginning and an end of reality. As a matter of fact, the experiences of tomorrow are not yet born, hence every day marks a perennial dawn, an everlasting here and an eternal now. And I thought that was pretty interesting, a perennial dawn. And that's, I don't know about you guys, but that's kind of my experience, is that every day, every year is a perennial dawn. There's always something new to look forward to, and I haven't run out of things to look forward to yet. I hope none of you have either.
You were right, Jim. He was born in 87, so he was 55 in
94. Okay, so he was a little more towards old age. Okay. Then he wrote another book called, or maybe it was a compilation of materials that he had written called Questions on Science of Mind. And the question that was asked was, why do we grow old? And it's a little bit Holmesy, so it may be difficult to listen to a little bit, but just bear with me. The question is, we were told there is no such thing as age in the divine idea of things. Then why do we, being divine incarnations, experience age and growing old? The answer is, divine law says, ye shall have the land ye see. So if man sees age as a human attribute, then he shall experience it. Man cannot redeem himself and his experience from the race consciousness of age and decay until he evolves to the plane above it. In this higher mental plane, his thought will begin to sense the truth that divinity is all there is in anything that is created, since divinity is the sum total of all life. Therefore, we see that as long as man believes that age is natural to human experience, he's functioning in the race consciousness, where this ideas and acts its life out in human experience. He does not know himself. He has not accepted his kingdom. He is like the prodigal son afar off. Divinity in man knows itself and knows man as itself, but it gives man choice and privilege as to beliefs and mental acceptances. Functioning through man as divine law, it fulfills man after his own mental images of himself. But the divinity remains unsullied by man's error. Divinity evolves man's consciousness, and in the evolution, man discovers his error and discards it. So, in essence, we are as old as we think we are. And I look at other people that are my age and kind of survey how they're feeling about their aging process. not that we're really old, but, you know, we go through, we were born at the same time, so we sometimes experience similar things. And I hear a lot of focus on illness. I can't believe it. I mean, why would anybody want to even think about being ill? But I've also noticed that he spends a lot of time out sick. Another guy that the three of us worked together in, we were born the same year. The other guy, he's in a rock band, and he's redoing his kitchen, and he's on a perpetual adventure. And so it's interesting to watch the contrast between those who dwell on, you know, the fact that my mother had high blood pressure, and therefore I probably will have high blood pressure. I'm always looking for symptoms of high blood pressure. You know, and guess what? You start to manifest it, which is a choice. So one of the benefits of growing older is that you are much better at demonstrating than you were when you were in your 20s. Yeah? Not always things you want to demonstrate, but nonetheless, you can demonstrate really well and quickly. So if someone comes up to you and asks that they're too old to find their rightful place, we should let them know that the truth within the truth, there's no age, and that God doesn't withdraw himself from us at a certain age, like at 55. When, you know the boxes you check on demographics forms? When you check that last box, God hasn't withdrawn himself. Since God is all there is. So he can't withdraw himself, and we're provided for at every age. So as we grow within us, the certainty of our relationship to the universe and the belief that heaven is lying within us, we'll never reach a time in our life when we're not progressing. We're always progressing. We're always changing. And a new dawn lies before us. And age and limitation are illusions. So as luck would have it, I read a lot on my Kindle, and I get a lot of free books. And I got this wonderful book a couple of weeks ago called Fierce with Age, Chasing God and Squirrels in Brooklyn. And it was written by Dr. Carol Osborne, she has written many spiritual books. And I love that. I just loved reading it. She talks about having turned 60, and she was a well-established blogger, mostly for boomer women. And she kind of lost her job, although she was still doing some writing. And she moved with her husband, who got a job change from California. She lived in L.A. to New York City. They had a dog named Lucky. She calls her age the wild side of midlife, which I love. And she says that the purpose of midlife is not just to grow old, but to grow whole. And it doesn't mean making things happen, like making a career happen or that sort of thing. But it's a chance to embrace what she would call radical freedom and self-acceptance. And she says, we let go of the parts of ourselves that we have assembled out of leftovers and scotch tape, having covered over our authentic selves with roles and responses that we hopefully will outgrow. Isn't that great?
What's her name again?
Dr. Carol Osborne. Hang on. I can look it up. I'll give it to you when I'm done talking. For some of us, the roles that we have performed for decades are no longer required of us. For instance, I'm no longer a wife. I'm still a daughter. But I'm not actively a daughter. I mean, my parents are well up in their 80s. I'm still a sister. I am still a worker, but I expect to retire within a few years. And so all these things that have defined me, as they start to disappear, I no longer am constrained by them. And for instance, I work for the military, and so that puts keeping a clearance puts a lot of constraints on you. You have certain things that you need to think in order to be able to be successful and keep your job. As I retire at some point, I realize that there are more opportunities that are available to me. For instance, I could travel to Syria without having to ask permission or get cleared. So possibilities open up. And in the case of Dr. Osborne, her husband was out of town, and she was getting more and more morose, and a storm came into town, and she went out on the balcony on her Brooklyn, their penthouse, and she had a major confrontation with God, because it was so noisy out with the storm, she could scream all she wanted, and it was very helpful to her, because she came up with 10 of her 11 spiritual truths of aging, and she's not like somebody like me. If I came up with 11 spiritual truths of aging, I'd probably write a chapter on each one. So I'm going to read them off, but there isn't necessarily a lot of material to go with it, but I think they're all important. And she eventually comes up with the 11th. The first is, the less of whom we think we used to be, the more room there is for God. And this also involves embracing our dark side, perhaps, and facing some of the things we may have been in denial about. We may have held some myths about who we are, or perhaps we've had some myths about how great our relationships were, and they really weren't. Maybe they weren't supportive. Maybe they were abusive. So we become more aware as we do that and look at our dark side and let some of that go as how enormous we really are. So in the words of Nietzsche, he says, to grow wise, you must first learn to listen to the wild dogs barking in your cellar.
Whoa.
Is that great or what? Number two is, others' rejection is our freedom. And like I said, she had been a blogger, and she wrote a lot about boomer women, and went to a conference one time. And she was sitting next to a younger person that was into some kind of marketing. And she said, well, isn't there value in marketing to boomer women? That's a huge demographic group. And the woman said, no, there's no future in it. Exactly. No future. Right. Right. So, you know, obviously that freed her up, because she no longer had to try to be somebody to try to market boomer women, because obviously there were people out there that felt there was no market for it. Number three, when we're doing God's work, we're not the judge of our success. And I also believe that we, certainly while we are on this earthly plane, we have no idea how successful we are or how influential we are. I think that's one of the, maybe the gifts in life. Number four, when we feel regret, it's God calling us to forgive more and to love with fewer conditions. And freedom is giving up worrying about who we used to be. It could be our career, or, you know, the daughter of somebody famous, and not measuring our, and we don't measure ourselves against others' expectations, especially our parents. And she talks about that over and over again, that her mother really, you know, she didn't pay as much attention to her as her brother, so she did all these things to try to get her mother's attention, and she became an overachiever. And you see as she begins to shed that in this book. Number five, we can dance with rather than struggle against the essence of who we are. Oh boy, do I like that one. And I think the longer you live, the more you begin to see who you really are, and begin to understand yourself and make friends with yourself. Six, the gift of longevity provides ample opportunity to not only grow old, but to grow whole. It allows us to slow down enough to take a good look at ourselves. Seven, when confronted with ultimate concerns, we can be more curious than afraid. And this, you know, an ultimate concern might be something like a serious illness, or maybe a relationship that's ended, instead of, I mean, there is grief involved, perhaps, but there's also an opportunity to kind of poke at it and see what does it really mean beneath the surface of the manifestation. 8, we've never been better equipped than we are now to face life as it arises. Oh, do you like that one, huh? 9, ultimately, hope is more important than peace. And as we all know, that expectation kind of feeds our passion and pulls us forward, I think. And peace to me is kind of, it's, while peace is nice, it's more of a here and now thing, whereas hope is more about the future and your beliefs about the future. 10, we don't always get to take a leap of faith, and sometimes we're pushed. So in the story, in the book, towards the end, her husband decides he's had enough of corporate life in New York, and he wants to go back to being a consultant. And so they become nomads for a while. And so that leap of faith was one that she got to take. It was like everything lined up. She went through that crisis on the balcony when she was screaming at God and came up with these 10 truths. And then all of a sudden, her husband, you know, decides he's going to leave his job and seek another career. And remember, they're in their 60s, so this isn't necessarily an easy thing to do, but, you know, it works out for them. Well, I just read number 10. Later on, she gets number 11. She knows there's 11 truths, but she doesn't get the first one right away. And this is my favorite one, and I know you relate to this, Allison. It's purpose enough just to make one dog happy.
Oh, she's lying on her back.
Exactly. Lucky is the family dog who lives to chase squirrels in the park in Brooklyn. And so that's why, you know, the book is entitled Chasing Squirrel and God in Brooklyn. And every morning, the woman walks with the dog to, and her husband drops him off at the subway, and then they go off and wander in the park and chase squirrels. Lucky loves everybody, and it's impossible to be unhappy around her. And she's always looking for someone to greet. And when you watch a dog, you realize how little it takes to feel like you found your place in the universe. You agree? Where life is exciting and meaningful. And so in summary, your place is not earned. You just take it in when you have a dog. And you savor it and you participate. And so it is. The 11 truths. I'm going to look up real quickly.